the Drown Rat Studios. You're listening to the Justice Speaks Up podcast, coming to you from everywhere and nowhere. Tipping the scales of justice with untold stories of American families. And now, Justice Speaks Up.
Justice Speaks Up is not a standard format podcast. You are listening to unscripted phone interviews for the purpose of documenting an ongoing open source human rights investigation into federally funded child abduction via collaboration between the U.S. Family Court and Child Protective Services. This often includes constructive parent and child estrangement on behalf of these agencies. This project is tracking the untold stories of U.S. families and conducting statistical research on behalf of this civil society in order to create solutions to a very important branch of the U.S. justice system that is statistically failing families and children. It's violating due process, violating constitutional violations, domestic terrorism, unlawful intimidation and surveillance of U.S. citizens. It's also conducting violations of the Violence Against Women Act by refusing to acknowledge the crimes committed against them in family court and in CPS custody cases. They're falsifying information in a federal, not all the time, but sometimes it's rare when it happens, but they're falsifying information in federal individual education programs for special needs children, forcibly medicating minors. Lying and falsification of evidence is often at play. They're often violating American Disabilities Act, human rights violations, and due to these failures, they are contributing to U.S. poverty levels, homelessness, mental health dilemmas, addiction, and all of these are a detriment to the entrepreneur and small business community by crushing many of these parents who own and many now are not operating startups. If you know any families that have been that may meet the criteria for this study, please have them email their participation request via the contact form on our website at justicespeaksup.us. Justice Speaks Up is also seeking to interview candidates who are running for government office, and we would love to discuss any areas in regards to their platform for reforming these entities and advocating for children and their families. In turn, we are also seeking anyone currently in these political seats to reach out to Justice Speaks Up via the same contact form to offer your input into this research study and to lend insight into for your constituents so that they can get answers. They've been left in the dark for many decades seeking answers to the areas that we are researching. Justice Speaks Up is conducting this research as a means to create a peaceful, long-lasting solution between U.S. families and these entities because we identify this as a U.S. crisis. I am requesting that listeners use their best judgment and not allow children under 18 to be present when you listen to these interviews.
Hi, this is Archer Sierra, and you're listening to the Justice Speaks Up podcast. And I'm on the phone with Miss Anonymous from Northern California, who is a former foster parent. And this is an exclusive interview with her where she speaks about her experience with the CPS as a foster parent. And we're just going to get right into the thick of it. Hi, Miss Anonymous. How are you today? Thank you for joining us.
Hi, I'm good.
So yours is an interesting story because you're actually the first foster parent we have that is going on the podcast. And why don't you just get right into it and tell us a little bit how CPS became involved. Well, with your story, I don't know if it's more important to talk about how you got the desire to get into foster care. We might want to start there.
Okay. I wanted to get into the foster care system because I used to be a foster child. I grew up in the foster care system, and I could relate with the children going into the foster care system. And I had been doing foster care for 4 years and had nearly 100 children placed with me. And I had the children that other foster homes gave notices on because they couldn't handle. we've never had any issues. One of the foster kids, before this incident happened with Child Protective Services, one of the foster kids went to school and said something to the counselor, and the next thing I know, CPS is at my door. And I let it in, and cooperating because I have nothing to hide, they had, when the sheriff and CPS had came in, they had basically manufactured evidence in order to obtain a warrant to come back later.
Well, let's back up a little bit, though, because you have an interesting story. Basically, the child, the foster child in question of this particular case is currently 5 years old, and you have a biological child the same age, and you have a total of 6 biological children with only the 1 5-year-old biological child still living at the home, correct? Okay, so when you took in this this 5-year-old foster child, at some point the CPS came in and was forcing you to adopt and basically telling you that if you didn't adopt her, they began kind of intimidation tactics that you would lose your license, right?
Yes. What they actually did was when they had come to us about adopting because they were going to terminate on the biological parents, I had told them, we have to talk about this as a family. This is a huge commitment. This is not just something you take lightly. And they removed the child from me and placed it into another home that was an adoptive home. And then when I got state adoptions involved, 5 days later, state adoptions, we got her back. So we committed to adopting her. We did, but we were coerced. I don't know if coerced is an appropriate word to use.
Well, because now let's take it step by step. Because I always like to follow the pre-interview outline. So they took her for 30 days, and during those 30 days, that's when it was a temporary placement, and then you got her back. And that was, they came in January of 2015, right? And then she was considered a special needs adoption, which we figured was she was diagnosed with having attachment disorder. Can't imagine why when you're taken from your biological parents. Sometimes that's necessary. Right. Sometimes it's not. But, you know, the burden falls on, well, it falls on social services to give that child what that child needs to acclimate. Because if you are in the business of removing children and severing a psychological bond, then you have a responsibility to nurture that child to some place of a healthy place, because they immediately have insecurities and they've had that basic primal foundation removed from them, right? And that's kind of what you saw in this child?
Yes.
So I'm not...
to date, she has been placed in 12 different... We were the longest stable home that she's been in. And like I said, she's 5 years old now. She's been moved 12 times.
Wow. Okay.
And she was with us for 2 years out of her 5 years of life.
Wow. So basically, you start advocating and knocking on the door of social services and asking to get this child a psychological evaluation, and that she needed therapy.
Yes.
And then she was also acting out and showing some behaviors that concerned you because you had another child similar age in the home. Why don't you talk about some of that acting out and behaviors that you noticed?
The temper tantrums were very extreme, and I do realize that all children are different. There is not a single child that is alike. There was some sexualized behavior that she was doing. And I had reached out to social services about getting therapy for her, and she needs, there's something going on. And I had been telling them and trying to get the psychological evaluation for 2 years. And trying to get her therapy for 2 years. And they were supposed to get her a psych evaluation. And then ended up not getting her a psych evaluation. They kept saying this is normal self-soothing behavior. The outburst, the, you know, pulling her pants down at school, at preschool, the sexualized behaviors. These are self-soothing behaviors, is what the state and the county continued to say.
So when they stepped in and well, let me not get ahead of myself. Basically, the more you advocated for this child, and again, guys, during the pre-interview, we elaborate on a lot and we try to condense it for you guys, but to save time, basically what happened was the summation is that this is basically an overhead expense. The social services is functioning as what it is. It's a business. The children are the commodity. And to give that child services is pretty much considered an overhead. And so a foster parent, it's no different than putting in a purchase order for services. And, you know, so if you're knocking on the door, you know, of any company and they keep denying you, you eventually start to get a little pushback, okay? And much like any other business, eventually you could be terminated by this behavior and consistent request for what? A purchase order. I'm just trying to make a correlation here that people can identify with. So when they took her, they gave you less than 24 hours, which there are standards for that. And to give everybody a little insight, by law in California, they have to give 48 hours notice to remove a child. And what they like to do is they like to come and take the kids pretty much out of the homes on a Thursday, because that gives them actually extra time over the weekend. So it gives them more time to prepare for any court procedures or anything. Am I right, Ms. Anonymous?
That's right. That's exactly right.
So currently where you're at with this is there's, you know, an open case and you waived your termination rights because you felt it was in the best interest of her. And why did you think it was in the best interest of this child?
Because she had been moved so many times and has not been able to be stable in one place. And the foster home that they had sent her to, and she'd stayed there for 8 months, the foster mom was adamant about wanting to adopt her because she would make things up and report things to Child Protective Services, and she doesn't even know us at all. I didn't know her, and, you know, she was taking her to behavioral health and then, you know, speaking to the doctor as if she's stating things as fact. They sounded like they were very adamant about adopting her, and I thought, okay, well, maybe this will be a permanent home and they won't move her again. Well, after we waived reunification in January of last year, they had still had her, and then she got to be too much 6 months later for them. So they gave notice on her. So basically, I felt in the best interest was I thought she was going to get stable because that's what she needs, is stability. And I didn't want to, 18 months later, uproot her and bring her back here. So don't get me wrong, I love her with all my heart, but I felt that was in her best interest to just cut the ties.
So, but that was very difficult for you, right? I mean, you still care about this child.
Absolutely.
You would still take her back. And because she's not your biological child and you were acting as a foster parent, which I have to say, when you get attached to a child like that, that was a very selfless act. And you acted in the best interest of the child to let her go because you felt that she would have a permanent home and be adopted. Now, keep in mind, this is something we missed, or didn't miss, but need to make the audience understand, is that she, Miss Anonymous was a foster care parent. This child was placed in her home. She was under duress and threat of having her license removed to adopt the child. So it was a forced adoption. And so she adopted her. Then they came in and removed her, and then tried to adopt her out a second time. Now, we're gonna get to a little bit and expand on that in a minute, but let's just keep moving along with the overall story. So she was labeled, there's some discrepancy in the paperwork, right? Before before she was adopted, she was denied special needs services. And then once she came up for adoption, she was labeled special needs, right? Or how did that go?
Yes. So they always denied that there was anything wrong with her. They didn't label her as special needs until it was adoption time. Once it was adoption time, we adopted her as a special needs child. So before our adoption got finalized, she wasn't even considered a special needs child. And then after we go to adopt her, now all of a sudden this is a special needs adoption.
Now, here's the thing. I don't want to conduct this like a normal podcast that we've done in the past, because you have valuable insight into foster care, which I really want to have that come across and resonate with people. Once a child is labeled special needs for adoption, the money for that child, once the adoption is complete, it goes up, yes?
Yes.
Okay. And then while they're in the system and they're not considered special needs, or excuse me, if she were to be considered special needs while she's in foster care, they would have to allocate extra funding towards her. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So pretty much when they realized it was in the best financial interest of themselves, that's when they labeled her special needs, because then the burden of providing her services falls on you.
Yes.
There you go. Now, let's get into how you began, your case is complicated one. Let's talk about the biological mother for a second, okay? You kept in touch with the biological mother, and at some point as you got to know her, you found out that she had actually fought for this child, and there were false allegations towards her by CPS that eventually got her removed and adopted her out, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then after you building a relationship with this woman, even though you cared for this 5-year-old adopted child you had, you really felt it was in the best interest of this child to be returned to this loving biological mother, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so that's important, guys. So not only do we have we been trying to establish the pattern of CPS going in and falsifying evidence in order to adopt these children out, but you can see, you know, these special needs label. It's pretty much like going, hey, this is USDA prime beef right here, guys. This one's worth a lot of money. And when, you know, so we also have the foster parent who's in receipt of this child who has come under fire. And let's get into the next part, which is where this story gets kind of really interesting. When they removed her, they refused, and keep in mind, she's adopted at this point. They denied you placement with a family member who is the mother-in-law, right?
Yes.
Okay, because that would have just been going to another family member. So then the CPS worker pretty much starts retaliating against you, right? They start pushing back. And tell us how this began, how this began to really affect your permanent life. Expand into how you this all led into you losing your foster care license and the fear that you've been living in that they're going to come and take your biological child if you pursue anything. Let's talk about how now... The really interesting part, she has a child support obligation now, guys, for a child that she was forced to adopt. And she's going to have to explain it because it gets pretty hairy. But, you know, in chronological order, just how you told me the story originally, I'd like you to tell everybody else, and I'll just be quiet.
On you want me to elaborate on the child support thing that recently just came up?
Yeah, the child support, because here again, this is really giving people insight into the foster agency, and that is what I want to focus on, the numbers, because we're really about following the money. And keep in mind, guys, the reason we're going to go into this is because I will just say it how it is. As you listen to this story, I'm going to call this social services doubling down. Because they get a lot of money when the child is adopted out, then they force her to adopt, then they pull the child out again and put the child up for adoption again. Now they're making two adoption fees on the same child. That's what I want to focus on, and how your journey as a foster parent pretty much getting screwed in this situation.
Okay, so I'm sure that a lot of people have heard about the title funding the Adoption and Safe Family Act. And with that, when you adopt a child, you get a stipend, which is an allowance basically every month for the child. And you get permanent Medi-Cal for them. So permanent health insurance for them, or until they're 18. So we had been getting that stipend, and we still get that stipend because apparently it is against the law for them to stop the stipend until they deem it we are no longer legally responsible. Meaning, once they can get her into an adoptive home, and until we can get her into an adoptive home, they will not terminate our parental rights. Once they terminate our parental rights, then they will stop that stipend. Now, 3 weeks ago, we were contacted by child support that now the county wants child support from us. And when I told child support, I don't have a job, I'm a stay-at-home mom, I have a child that's not school-aged yet. And the child support guy was like, well, we'll just say that you can work 40 hours a week and we'll base your child support obligation on that. So, it's kind of really complicated because here we are receiving this stipend every month for a child that's not in our care. And then when I had made the suggestion, well, why don't we just keep that stipend? She's not in our care. Keep it so that that can go to her care. They will not do that. And I don't even know what the child support obligation is going to be yet. I have not heard from them. It could be the whole amount that we get every month. It could be more. It could be less.
Well, and you don't have a job because your job was taking care of foster children.
And I did that for 4 years.
Right. So pretty much, and now you're starting to see, guys, as if you've been following the podcast since the beginning, how, you know, this affects the family unit's income. And you're going to start to see the pattern evolve of, and you got to look at these stories and look at it like, and pretty much how I figured it out is you have to look at it like breaking down a business model. And if you look at it, you know, we talked earlier about how, you know, I began this journey investigating family court. And that's how we got into CPS, because I realized the court-appointed social workers in family court are lying. And you know, there are statistics out there that show 92% of the time the family courts are giving the children to the abusers or neglectful, you know, parents, not in the best interest of the children. And then this puts the children in the crosshairs of CPS. And then the kids end up going into foster care. And once they, you know, go into foster care, now you have, you know, these monthly stipends, you have the Title IV funding, you have now two parents paying child support to the state. And now with speaking to Miss Anonymous and starting to speak to some of the foster parents who have been harassed, they're literally reaching in the pocket of the people who are good enough citizens of our community to take these children in. And like you said, she has biological children of her own. And, you know, she's still taking in the ones that, you know, nobody wants because they're broken kids after being stripped from their homes. And in this situation, again, she knows the biological mother. So she knew the backstory. And so then you see that once it's interesting to have insight from foster care, because now you're seeing how, you know, they're going to get two adoption fees from this child, and they're reaching into her pocket for child support while giving her $812 a month. And now they said that they're going to basically, you know, garnish your husband's wages, right? Because that's the reward you get for taking in foster kids. I mean, that's insane. So what I see is the correlation is they're making from one child, one family, one child, they're making a slew of money. And I think we figured out, like, for every adoption process, it's over $100,000, right?
Yes.
Okay, so now this same child, they get you to adopt her. Now they got, you know, child support from you coming in. And then they're going to adopt her out again. And then because nobody's, you know, because nobody's doing anything with these people, they're just allowed to run like their own, you know, baby snatching, money making fools. They can adopt this child out multiple times. And I can see clearly that they're going to cover their trail. They're going to do whatever they have to do to make this money. And Jesus, I mean, you could make as many adoption fees as you wanted off of one child. Am I wrong?
No, that's right.
Because there's no, I don't believe, in my research, I've ran across where they're not allowed to do it more than X amount of time. So this is, taking a child out of a home is an endless money tree. Jesus.
Our case wasn't the only one in the same county, but there was another adoptive family that lost their adopted child and has been readopted out.
Jeez. How many times has that child been adopted out?
I'm not sure. Those people are so scared to come forward and say anything, but I don't blame them.
Well, you know what? And that's what this project is about. Is giving people a place where I don't mind letting you speak anonymously and telling these stories. Somebody has to start talking about this at some point.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying, America. It's time to have a serious conversation. This is insanity. And I think we're all in the wrong business. I mean, Jesus, I mean, you make a movie, right? And it goes into theaters for a little while. And then pretty soon it comes out of theaters. And then, you know, you might get, you know, your DVD rentals and your digital on demand, and you get all these other secondary markets that you can make money on. But wouldn't it be great if the film just stayed year round and you just kept making money off of it like it is when it's in theaters, like that very first, you know, if you have a real strong box office weekend, you know, opening weekend, wouldn't it be great if we could just do that all the time? I mean, geez, I'd love to hack that. I mean, I'd like to be able to figure out how to do that. But again, we're breaking down the business model of the Department of Social Services. And as always, I encourage anyone in these departments to contact me through the website at justicespeaksup.us. Any phone calls to me will be recorded. I always like to announce that for the purpose of the podcast and will be archived. So and that includes even phantom calls and weird calls and hang-up calls. Everything's recorded and tracked. So as if this couldn't be worse for you, it does get worse, right? Because you voluntarily surrendered your foster care license because of threats of them starting to put pressure on you to come in and take your natural child. Mainly because that started in January 2016, where they took the adopted child to another county and then took her into a room and got her recorded with an interview. A doctor's interview with social services, and the doctor stating that there was some type of sexual abuse. And what they did to put intimidation tactics on you was they started to come after your husband and trying to prove that he was a sexual offender, even though over 4 years you've had 100 kids in your home. There's never been any claims of this ever. I mean, you're good, upstanding citizens in your community and for doing this work. And tell us a little bit more about that, because, you know, to me, this is the intimidation tactics. And a lot, again, guys, there's this pattern: false labels, words as weapons being used to harm people, good people in our communities. Why don't you expand on that a little?
Okay, so initially she was removed August of 2015, and in December of 2015, several months later, I guess the foster parent, because as I said before, she was acting out sexually and was having sexualized behavior while she was even in our care, and the foster parent had called the CPS worker and told the CPS worker that she had pulled her pants down at school, at daycare, and she had been getting kicked out of all her daycares. So the CPS worker called the sheriff's department, and they did this secret investigation, and it was January when I got the court documents in the mail that said that we didn't even know we were under investigation until I opened up this packet from the Department of Social Services with the new allegation against my husband. It did state on there, everything was unfounded. They took her to another county, had her seen by a doctor, because they, to me, I felt they were trying to substantiate something after reading all the paperwork. And then when we had, it was all unfounded, when we had went to court, we had asked for that to be sealed, because an allegation like that on somebody definitely can ruin them. They can lose their job. You know, that is a serious allegation. And the attorney for the county turned around and said, well, in case anything comes up in the future, we don't want to seal that, even though it was unfounded.
Yeah, it's basically, so, here, we got you by the balls. You're going to play our way.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. So, and I know it's a scare tactic, and I know it's an intimidation thing, because, like, I do have a 5-year-old biological child that lives with me.
Exactly. Because, listen, this is what they're doing to some of the CPS workers that, I mean, I've spoke to, but again, they're hesitant to come on, and I'm working on those guys, you know, again. I'm trying to get everybody an opportunity to speak, you know, anonymously, so these stories can just get out. There's people, again, for those who haven't maybe heard the previous podcast, there's people in CPS that are scared of whistleblowing on anybody or anything in the system, because they're scared they're going to have their own children taken. And it's really horrible. It's horrible what's happening, actually. But that's why I thought it was important to start this podcast and just start to get people talking. Just start talking. Yes. So I would like you to share your experience. Talk about when they came in and with the warrant and they photographed evidence that was used later, and talk about that whole experience from the time they come in the door with a warrant. How did that all go down?
When they showed up, it was the CPS worker and one sheriff. And it was in the late afternoon, early evening. And, of course, I let them in, you know, cooperating. Don't have nothing to hide. Asked them what's this about. They said that they had got an allegation. And I talked to them for a few minutes. They walked through my house. You know, the sheriff was saying, oh, your house is really tiny and you've got a lot of food and the kids all look, you know, well-groomed and dressed and everything. And everybody looks happy because all the kids were home from school by then, running around playing. And then they went out, they found a board, a cork board, leaning up against the wall in like the doorway. And the allegation was that I had put her in a playpen with a cork board on top of it to control her. Well, they seen this cork board that is right in the doorway that's used to keep the dogs from going in and out on the carpet. And it went from being a playpen to they took this cork board out of that room, walked it into the bedroom, laid it on top of the crib, a crib, and started taking pictures. Then they left, came back close to midnight, with a warrant. Three cop cars showed up with the CPS worker, and they asked for the child, and they handed us papers, which is a warrant, and they took her. And that night, I was telling the worker, I said, I have family member you can place her with right now until we get this sorted out. And she said, no, we'll discuss that later.
So this worker you had, she was pretty vindictive, right? It was enough to give you a bad gut feeling about her?
Yes.
Well,
she was very, like her head was too big. She'd been with the department for 10 months before that.
Okay, so here's where my analytical mind steps in. Let's break this down for a second. Everybody knows it was a standard playpen, not like a pack and play, right?
It was a pack and play.
It was a pack and play that they claimed you were putting her in and putting the cork board on top of it, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, hey, parents, anybody who's likes to do outings and be active with their kids, let's think about how a pack and play looks. There is very in the center where the joints are, it breaks down, and that really would not allow a cork board to sit flush on top of a pack and play one. Two, she's 5 years old. She grows well, right? She's standard height for a 5 year old, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So if she were to go and stand inside that pack and play, how far up would the plaque and play come? Approximately maybe mid-chest for her?
Yes.
Okay. So, okay, we got mid-chest, we got cork board. And how heavy do you think that cork board weighs?
We weighed it. It's less than 5 pounds.
Okay. Do you think that child could...
You put thumbtacks in it.
Okay. Do you think that child could lift by leveraging and pushing up, do you think that child and any other average five-year-old could push that up with all of her weight power through pushing with her back?
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go. So now a pack and play again is not wood, right? So there's no way that a piece of corkboard could be secured to plastic unless there was rope or binding. And even then, it would have wear marks, correct? And so they took photographs. So there should be wear marks to show that this was actually happening. And it's not wood, so it can't be nailed down. And so I would be interested in seeing that evidence, that photographic evidence that they took, because...
Well, the photographic evidence they took, they actually used the wooden crib that was in the bedroom for comparison purposes, and the officer states this in his own police report, that he placed that on top of a wooden crib for comparison purposes only. And he also noted that there was no wear marks on the crib. So it went from a pack and play to a... And then somehow they saw a folded up dog crate leaning up against my wall, and it went to... Somehow the dog crate factored into it.
Okay. So what does the warrant say? What did the warrant say? What did the actual paperwork say? Because I'm sorry, you can say anything. Okay, you can say pack and play to get in the door. Okay, and that's what that warrant is for. Okay, if your claim is that it's a pack and play, okay, and you have some phantom witness that's sitting there saying, "I witnessed her put her in the pack and play." Well, pack and play ain't a fucking crib, and a crib ain't a fucking pack and play, and a pack and play and a crib ain't a dog crate. So what does the actual CPS paperwork say, and what did the warrant say? Because you can't walk in and then... Well, because you can use a warrant to get in on anything, and then any of us could just start looking around and go, maybe it's that. Maybe it's that. Hey, maybe it's that over there. No. What did the witness say that led the CPS worker to issue a warrant? Because otherwise they should have actually, you know, taken it. They should have taken it as evidence. So what did the CPS claim say, the paperwork? Because I want to, again, and thank you for giving me these documents, but for the purpose of you being on the podcast, let's compare this. Let's compare what the claim on the CPS paperwork said compared to what the warrant say. What did the warrant say?
Okay, so it says on the detention report that, there is substantial danger to the physical health of the child is suffering severe emotional damage, and there are no reasonable means by which the child's physical or emotional health may be protected without removing the child from the parent's or guardian's physical custody. So there was stuff in here also. The parents have been practicing cruel and dangerous methods of discipline. Despite their experience and training as foster parents, as well as being mandated reporters. Trained in child abuse and neglect.
Is that all? Is that all it says?
No. This is just part of the... I'm looking for my warrant right now. I have a whole box of papers. I've kept everything.
It's just lovely. I love people like you. You got, and anybody listening, you hold on to everything. And by the way, I just want to say our legal advisor for anybody listening, anyone involved with this agency, if you're being produced with a document, our legal advisor is wanting us to pay forward some advice. You can take it or you cannot leave it. I mean, you take it or leave it. And again, this isn't paid legal advice. It's just helpful a suggestion that if you feel it applies, you know, it's no different than going to the library and researching a NOLO guide. But again, she was saying to me during our conversation, and I thought it holds enough relevance that I'll share it. She was saying that not to sign any paper, your actual signature that makes it legal and binding, you should print your name and then put a comma and then put U.D., which means under duress. And I'll just put that out there while she's looking for her paperwork. So anybody who's, you know, if you're signing a document under duress, then you need to put your name on that document to reflect that you were under duress at the moment.
Okay, so here's the warrant. and it's quite a lengthy warrant, but and I don't want to say any names, but it does say some case laws, Rogers versus County of San Joaquin, Calabretta versus Floyd. The following facts establish the existence of grounds for the issuance of a detention warrant and further establish probable cause for believing that said grounds exist. And then it goes into about the CPS worker, how long she'd been employed in her capacity, how many reports she investigated. She investigated 60 reports in a 10-month period. It says...
Wow, way to stroke your own knob. I mean, seriously? Who cares how many freaking cases? If you're a liar, you're a liar. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, and 60 cases in 10 months, that's an awful lot of cases to be investigating. It says, on August 20th, 2015, this writer received a report in regards to, I'm not saying the child's name, three-year-old foster child. Oh, wait. Three-year-old adoptive daughter of me and my husband, who also had placement of four foster children. It was reported that me put three-year-old, who will be four in September, in a playpen and covers it with a piece of wood. It was also reported that the children were often left outside, and the biological child was allowed to be inside. So that's what this is. It says, when asked to explain to this writer how she was locked up, because she says that she talked to the three-year-old, the adopted child, was interviewed by her, and she stated, my mom is mean, she locks me up. And then when the CPS worker asked her what she meant by locked up, she stated that she's in her playpen, and mom puts the thing on top, and then another thing on top. So I can't get out.
And the CPS worker is claiming that the three-year-old adoptive daughter at the time made that statement to who?
Yes. Also, so that's basically what the warrant.
But what I'm trying to find out
there. And there's pictures.
But wait a minute. Okay. A, corkboard is not wood. And if they couldn't find a piece of wood large enough to cover that crib or a pack and play, then there's no evidence on the premises to uphold the warrant. It's like saying that, you know, you were witnessed holding a handgun, shooting somebody in a car, and they walk in and they arrest you because all they find is rifles, but there's no handgun. I mean, that's not what the witness testimony states. You have to look for that gun because, you know, of course, anybody who owns firearms is going to own more than one firearm, more likely. But if you're looking for a handgun, you look for a handgun, you don't go in there and go, well, he has rifles, so I guess it was him. I mean, that's not how it works. A warrant is to go in and look for something very specific, and that's why I was kind of drilling you, and I apologize, because I wanted to know what it said. And right there, it says wood. Wood is not corkboard. And, you know, and again...
The pictures that are attached to this warrant, the pictures they used to get this warrant, are the pictures of a wooden crib with a corkboard on top.
Right, because when they came in, that's right. Okay, now wait a minute. That's a very important thing we need to let everybody know. When they came in and they took her temporarily, right, they came in and did a walkthrough, and the sheriff put the cork board up on the crib for comparative photography, okay, photographic analysis. But what ended up getting the warrant was this picture that they took. So, but again, let's go back though. Who in the report, in the CPS worker, are they saying it was an anonymous source that said this?
No, it said it was one of the other foster children.
Okay, there you go.
And they reported it to somebody at school and they forgot to black out that it was the school psychiatrist. They forgot to black that out on one of their reports. but they were trying to do it as it was anonymous, but it was a foster child had said something to the school psychiatrist, which at the end of the last school year, this foster child, the school psychologist, was wanting to put her into yoga classes. And I said, lady, the nearest yoga class is an hour away. I've got four kids in car seats. You're welcome to come, because she was worried about what she was going to do all summer long. And I told her, we do a lot of stuff throughout the summer. Don't worry about that. Well, she really wants to go to yoga class. So I had gotten into it at the end of that school year, before all this happened, with the school psychiatrist.
Okay.
So I think what she did was she brought her in, because this was only after 3 days after school started when she got removed. She brought the foster kid in. Well, what did you do all summer long?
You know what? This is... It's none of your business. Do your job. If your job is to talk to kids and soothe them, talk to them and soothe them. But your job is to deal with things that are happening on campus during school hours, and to deal with situations to help that child acclimate to the classroom settings during the school day, and then refer out if there's something going on. I think it's total. I think the more I look at these cases, I'm sorry. Statistically, it's impossible that, I mean, there's such a high amount of cases and there's so much similarities. It's the pattern is forming. And that's when I started looking at these cases. And keep in mind, Miss Anonymous, in January, again, I mean, sorry guys, it's repetitive for people who aren't listening, but to let you know, I had 9,624 cases. All these correlations were. It established a pattern. And that's why I started thinking, you know, this is all very interesting. And this should not just be it should not just be me deciding that there's a correlation here. And I wanted to open up the conversation to America, because I think these kids have a bounty on their heads. And I think these people have a very interesting business model that's very profitable. And that's what I want to break down. And I don't think, and in most things, people will always tell you, follow the money. And if we follow the money, I'm sorry, that shows that it kind of makes sense why a lot of this shit doesn't add up. I mean, and then you see where the contracts are coming from, you know, from everywhere from, you know, victims of crime is given. I mean, if you own a visitation center, okay, and where for supervised visitation and child exchanges, you can get a $75,000 up to $200,000 a year from the victims, the VAWA, Violence Against Women Act. So there's stuff like that. Like, why would the Violence Against Women Act be funding that? Well, okay, that does make sense, because it would provide a safe environment for a father to visit his children. But, you know, it just, there's, what I'm saying is that the structure that exists, it appears to do good work, but it appears that social services is kind of like this lone wolf that's doing its own thing. And you can't understand why they're allowed to have so much free rein. So when you start to try and figure that out, it comes down to, oh, I don't know, money. Like we just said, why would they be doing this? I mean, and like the evidence, and sorry guys, some of this stuff you can't see, but it doesn't hold up. There's contradictions left and right. And I refuse to believe, because I know that there are still good people doing good work in the courts. I refuse to believe that they're incompetent. They're well-educated. And they certainly know how to draft fancy little words on paper to get these children out of the way. But something's happening here, that these words are being drafted, and it's like the system is using this terminology to create a web that ensnares not just families and children, but now even good foster parents in the community.
And that's what we're talking about. I mean, again, guys, I'm not doing this because I have all the answers. I'm doing this to start a conversation and to start showing these cases. You know, I'm trying to get them out at least once a day where people can start evaluating this and coming to their own conclusions, because at some point, these people who, you know, as these parents have gone up to these officials and stuff, you know, there's going to be a time where these people need to be elected back into those seats. And from what I can see, I mean, you already can see that we have a couple cases coming out of Arizona. I mean, there's hundreds of cases in each state that I feel warrants an investigation by each state. And again, taxpayers, this is a lot of money that every state is getting out of, you know, your tax dollars. I mean, do you approve of the harassment of foster care parents? Do you approve of falsified evidence? Do you approve of families being torn apart in your communities based on lies? And the problem is you can't take it at face value anymore. And that's what this project is about, is digging deeper. Everybody goes, oh, well, oh, okay, it must have been a, you know, crackhead, must have been this, must have been that. Oh, everybody's got a story. But damn it to hell, no, that's not the case. It's really not the case. Okay? Not one person we've had on here so far is a, you know, is a person that would be looked down upon in their community. And this woman is a foster care parent who is under severe harassment. And I mean, you're pretty much, do you feel like you need to leave the area to protect the five-year-old you have?
I've been, yes, since this all started, and I have, do want to leave really bad. I really do, but, you know, I have no financial means. My husband has a stable job, you know, that he's worked very hard to get in the position he's in.
Which they're trying to get a part of.
And he doesn't want to back down. He doesn't want to leave, but I want to leave because I just don't feel my child is safe.
Well, you know what? This is where men go wrong. You should always trust a woman's gut instinct. Always. I do. I believe we have woman's intuition. I believe it's a real thing. I think men have it too. I just think there's something about, you know, women that it's just a little bit more in tune with us, just like men know how to fix things better. I mean, we're all just naturally in tune to other things, you know?
But yeah, well, and like my husband says, simple solution, you just know not to let him in. No, that's not a simple solution. You know, I heard a lot of stuff when I was a foster parent from foster family agency social workers, from CPS social workers. I heard a lot of stuff. And trust and believe, there is a bounty on these kids' head, every single one of them.
Yeah.
If they can make money off of a child, they will make money off of the child.
Now, how do the social workers benefit? Because, I mean, from what we can see so far is that they get bonuses. They get bonuses when they take so many kids into CPS custody. They get bonuses when they adopt so many out. And then when they've met so many objectives, they get promotions. What do you know about that? Do you know anything at all? And it's okay if you don't know anything.
You know, I don't know. Honestly, about if the CPS workers themselves get bonuses, I truly believe behind closed doors that some of these people actually think that what they're doing is good, because I have seen where CPS workers have been booted out if they didn't go with the flow. You know, to get into that office, to become one of them, they'll get rid of you just as quickly if you don't go with it. You know, and it's not necessarily like the CPS workers, it's their supervisors that are actually calling all the shots. So the ones that already got their promotions. And I do believe that, if they do a good job and they get their kudos and they do get promotions, so they get in those higher positions.
But here's the thing, okay, because they're, well, like when we talked about, It's control. I mean, let's just go back here for a second, okay? You know, again, it's a business model, okay? And there's an element here we skipped over that we need to talk about. When we talk about it being a business model, okay, and all of these court-appointed, psychologists, attorneys, the doctors, okay? It's when you pull these court files, it's all the same players all the time, okay? And so when, in your case, it was a very good example. When you tried to go and get this girl psychological services, they refused her because you had Kaiser. Now, if anybody doesn't know Kaiser, you only can go to Kaiser campuses, okay? So basically, because the courts don't have control over Kaiser doctors, they kicked it out, right?
Yep.
Okay, because they want you to go to the court-appointed psychologist that, you know, are getting, you know, I believe, and again, guys, anybody involved, we're just trying to understand your agencies as taxpayers, as voters. We have a right to understand. You're a government-funded entity that opens you up to scrutiny, and that's what we want to do, and we want to talk to somebody, some of these supervisors. If I'm wrong, I'll apologize later, but in the sake of good discovery, somewhere along the way, we might be right and somewhere we might be wrong. But right now, we're going with the evidence. So from what I can see, there's some contracts that are going to these psychologists, and because they're contracted, they're retained, and they're on standby whenever the court needs to refer a family, right? So then you start to get this double down syndrome where, they're going to be adopting out once, twice, and now they got the foster parents paying child support. So I'm going to hunt down this biological mother, and I'm going to see if she's paying child support, because I would think that's fraud. I want to see if she's having to actually pay child support, because here's the funny thing. I actually have somebody on standby, Miss Anonymous. If you don't mind, I'd like her to chime in, because I thought it would be interesting just to bring her on briefly. And yeah, we're going to run over, but it's for the purpose of driving home and bringing attention to the foster care dynamic. And we have we'll call her Miss Anonymous 2. Miss Anonymous 2. Real quick, can you take 5 minutes and chime in and talk about your experience with foster care and what you came to learn about your father and child support?
Yes, no problem. I was in foster care when I was 15 years old. Prior to going into foster care, my mother had her husband adopt me, and I'm from Dallas. I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, and I'm in Dallas when I was born. You did not have to put a father on the birth certificate. So because my real father was an hermit, they added my stepfather, who effectively adopted me. When I was 15, I started looking for my real father and to see, you know, who he was and check him out. And I found out when I was 17, I connected with him. And I found out that he was paying child support.
For how many years did he pay child support?
When him and my mother broke up, when I was about 7 or 8, all the way up until I was 21, he owed back child support from that because he had some time when he didn't have a job or anything. But come to find out that even after my mother had my stepfather adopt me, my father was still paying child support. Then when I went to foster care, both my mom and my dad were paying child support. My mom and my stepdad, my adopted dad, was paying child support.
Okay, so for listeners, that is 3 adults paying child support for 1 adopted child that later went back into state care. Are you doing the math? Are you keeping the count? Along with the incentives coming into the state and that little monthly monetary stipend. Okay. Thank you, Anonymous, too. I'm going to have you just chime right back out so I can continue with our primary guest. Is that good? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for chiming in. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So, Miss Anonymous, our primary guest, what do you think about that little statement?
Honestly, it does not surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. Now, I was told that once they terminate and they do get her adopted out, the child support is supposed to cease, at least in this state. I don't know if the rules apply and what the rules apply in other states, but in this state, that once they terminate us, basically once they find her somebody that'll commit to adopting, then the child support obligation is supposed to cease, and then, of course, they stop the stipend.
But here's what I'm interested in knowing, and I cannot wait to do a follow-up interview with you. Would you promise me, as soon as you find out what child support decides you're going to have to make, because I know they're trying to garnish your husband's wages, I want to know if that's going to exceed the $812 a month that they were giving you to provide for her that they're not wanting to stop giving you, which is asinine and totally backwards. I don't understand that. That money should be going to the people who are providing care for her now. It should follow the child. That doesn't make sense to me.
That's right.
But it's not following the child. And I want to know if they're going to come out, because they're going to base it on your husband's income. So
now
here's the thing, because it's anonymous. Okay. How much does he make a year?
He makes $4,200 a month. What's that a year?
Well, it's 42,000, 48, 52, 54,200 maybe off the top of my head. I'm not so great at eyeball and mouth, but
okay. Yeah, so around 50,000.
So hold on real quick. The person who I have on standby, can you go to the website and look up the California Child Support Calculator and factor that real quick and just chime in as soon as you have it? And we're going to figure out what that is right now, because if anybody doesn't know, you can Google your state and your child support calculator, and you can find out an estimate of what your child support will be. And it's not for certain, but it definitely will give us a ballpark.
Yeah.
But while she's looking that up, here's what I want to know. Let's say, and we could be wrong, so everything we say until she chimes in with that number could be, you know, completely irrelevant by the time she does. But what are you going to do if they come back and they say that you owe more than the $812 a month in child support? Because here's where I look at it. The child support can't be more than $812, because that's what the state has allocated how much it costs to take care of that child, right? So technically,
right,
ethically, I would think they couldn't come back with child support more than $812, right?
You would think.
You
now,
would think.
Now, I was told that if it is more than the $812 a month, that I am to contact the adoption assistance payment representative and tell them that I have a child support order, this is what I was told. Allegedly, they will cover the balance of the child support obligation.
And what's the name of that agency again?
Adoption Assistance Program. So it is through the county. It is also through the state. But the county actually gives the payment, the AAP benefit, the adoption assistance payment. The county is the one that actually deposits that money.
Because the money comes from federal, and then each state gets their own amount of money, and then it's allocated to each county. Yeah, right. Got it. It's a trickle down effect. And I'm sorry for a third time, because I'm a brain cramp today. Adoption assistance. What was the third? What was the name of that agency again?
Adoption assistance. So
is that all it is? If I Google, it's just going to find adoption assistance.
Yeah, adoption, just Google AAP benefits and it should come up, adoption assistance payments.
Oh, okay. Adoption assistance payments program. Got it. Now I got
payments.
It.
Yeah.
Now,
you can find that pretty easily.
And where does that money go? Where does that extra money go?
I don't know. I would certainly like to know that because I don't mind paying child support if I'm still legally obligated. My husband and I have no issue with paying child support because she's still legally our child and we're responsible for her. But that money's not going for her care, you know, and somebody's putting it in their pocket.
But wait a minute. What are you talking about? The 812 is coming to you. It's not going to her care, and they're perfectly okay with that. So do you really think any money that's coming from that adoption assistance payments program is really going to go and follow that child? The damn state stipend isn't even going towards her care. It's coming to you, and you're having to beg them to take it back.
Yeah. Can I break in for a second?
Yes, please.
How much is it a month that he makes? Because they go by monthly, not yearly.
$4,200. I'm just so very interested. I'm a naturally curious person, I guess. I mean, at some point, you had to have been curious too, right, Miss Anonymous?
Yes. There's so many questions I have, and there's so much research I want to do.
Well, good. We're going to keep you
around. I just know that there's something definitely wrong.
Well, according to the other foster parents in your agency, they believe there's something wrong, too. And apparently, according to a lot of CPS workers. But here's the thing. Here's where they're going. They get people right in their Achilles heel, their children. And I'm going to tell you what. And while she's looking this up, okay, because nobody likes dead air, let's face it, but I'll take this opportunity. Anyone who has a child who is a reasonable, loving, caring parent, if you come at their child, they're going to come at you with everything hell has to offer. And I'm going to tell you what, I believe everybody has their comeuppance. And after talking to so many people and looking in so many cases, I'm going to tell you right now, if someone does not get control of this agency, there is going to be an uprising of these broken people, because out of great heartache and heartbreak and grief and bereavement and loss, it's like death that never ends. You are damaging people to their soul. And I'm telling you, these parents, are when they unite, it's going to be hell hath no fury, because it's fathers too, it's mothers, it's aunties, it's uncles, it's teachers that love these children, it's music teachers that love these children, it's you know, friends and family and other parents that live down the street and their playmates, their children grew up as playmates. You're coming at just a set of parents or a single parent. You better remember that every parent has a network to themselves that is a group of advocates for these children. So if you think severing the parental rights and removing a child and defaming the people that only you have control over will eliminate, you have to remember, when you look a parent in the eye, there's a dozen more people behind them, okay? And if you don't like people who protest and you don't like people who resist and you don't want people in your face, damn job, damn liar. Because this is truly damaging people. And this project is about getting kids for the justice for these children. Because at the heart of it all, we just love kids. We love kids. We hate liars and we hate thieves. And more importantly, we hate people who traffic children for any type of financial means. And I'm sorry, to me, this is starting to show the pattern of racketeering and these agencies compiling together in order to remove property from a person and get to their money and rip apart their income and their infrastructure. And, you know, and I know that's a bold statement, but that's why I took this to the air, because the majority of society, matter of fact, I mean, I think a large portion of society, I mean, we're all intelligent people. You know, America is one of the most educated countries in the world. And when this message spreads, people will hear this and they will start to see something. And the first step is voting these people out of office that these parents have been screaming to, these governors, these senators, these congressmen, you know, assemblymen. I mean, I spoke, you know, off the record with an anonymous source that works in maybe perhaps one of those agencies. And they said that the only way they can intervene is if there's legislation. Well, we're going to do another talk about what it takes to get a legislation written and get it legs. And I have a good idea of who I may go to. I'm not going to call anybody else out, but I know that they've had recent success with getting legislation in an area of criminal law. And I'm going to be going to that person and be like, you know what? I want your team, because I just got told that all these kids are going to continue to suffer unless we can get legislation on the books. And I'm sorry, I went for 45 minutes with that person. I said, do you mean to tell me that you have no domain over calling out lying, thieving, starts to stealing kids and due process violations and ADA violations? You don't have any obligation. Every time they said, well, it falls under family court. It's really a family court issue. This is no longer family court issue, people. This is no longer family court issue. Okay. And first of all, what they're doing, they have no immunity. They have, based on their own actions and dishonesty and treachery, they have been stripped of immunity. And even the people who are at the state levels, nobody wants to deal with them. And I believe I've unearthed exactly why that is. And as we go on, I'm going to be telling everybody, you know, and yeah, I'm being harassed for this work, but guess what? I don't care, because it's already out there. Okay. And in 30 days, it'll be viral. Every one of these parents, all those aunties, those uncles, those advocates, those people who do care, people who are for court reform and, you know, trying to make sure, you know, value the family unit, understand the love that they have for their own children. And that resonates. I mean, because I think as parents, okay, even if you have that lives next door, you still love their child. You know what I'm saying? And any reasonable parent will go, okay, I really don't like the mother, but you know, that's a child. Come on over and play. Sit at the table with my kids, have some, you know, juice and snack and go play and just be normal. We don't punish the children. And so that right there is what they underestimated. And I mean, I'm just telling you, this is my warning, people, that if you don't clean up your act, you thought the Women's March on Washington was huge. That was just for humans' rights, okay? Like, seriously? I mean, I'm a woman, okay? And I will tell you right now, I value the rights of children more than I value my own rights. So I see it.
Agree.
I see it coming. I truly do. This has broken people. And, you know, you combine that with the fact that you take the most valuable thing away from a person. You take their child away. They don't care about their money. They won't care about their possessions. You harm that child after you take them. That comes tenfold coming right with them. And that's what's happening to these kids. And so, this is my attempt to bring awareness and reform it before that ugly situation occurs. I started to see it. I'm predicting it. So we only got one of two choices. We either clean this up and reform, or you're going to see a lot of, you know, you're going to see a large march. And I think people will be faced with having to clean up their act and reform this. So I think the most peaceful way to do it is to do a podcast and to give people, get their stories out there. And, you know, pull back the veil of ignorance and voluntary complacency and lack of empathy, and just start listening. And let's get ahead of this before it ends up in some kind of conflict between our local courthouses and our local child support office or our local social service office. And these parents start marching on these county offices. I mean, and again, guys, I have advocates that pre-screen clients or not clients, because you don't, I don't charge you anything, but our interview subjects. Okay. So there are some people who are so angry and full of rage. We tell them we have to put them to the side. We have to have somebody talk them down, because they're so full of anger and hurt. And I just see it coming. I see a level of rage in some of these people. And, you know, yes, I am blunt, and I call it how I see it, and because I'm entitled to my opinion, but I also go off of fact. So, you know, again, based on what I can see, we must reform. We must reform, because these agencies are hitting people at their most valuable place, the core of their soul. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of babbling at this point, but I know for a fact, if you fracture a person's soul, because you're going to get whatever you get. And I see it. I see it. I mean, I think we had one person, well, we have two people we're dealing with right now. And you know, our first podcast, she lost her shit. She just lost her She eventually just lost her, and she's in the wind and, you know, doing whatever she wants to do, but she's a free woman and can do whatever she wants. But, you know, I don't know. What's the consensus of the foster care people in your area?
What do you mean?
I mean, what are they saying? Like this other parent who's, you know, lost her income and these beautiful children. And again, this isn't a job for these people, listeners. This is an act of love.
That other foster family, they ended up leaving the state and moving to a different state because they just were being continuously harassed. And there again, they also, the other child, they had adopted two children, and they were told that they had to adopt them because they were siblings, because the one had a lot of issues, behavior problems, and they didn't want to adopt that one. But the county made them adopt both of them. They said, it's a package deal. You've got to take both of them. Well, of course, they were trying to control the out-of-control child's behaviors, and CPS came after them, took that child, you know, and they were both legally adopted. They went ahead and legally adopted both the children. So it looks to me, the way I'm seeing it, they're starting to target foster parents. You know, and from what the community care licensing was saying as of January 1st of this year, that in order for you to be a foster parent, you must be willing to adopt. You have to be a concurrent home to be able to have a foster care license. So they are trying to force adoptions on people.
Well, unfortunately, you know, hey, you know what? I'll tell you something. Do you know, I actually wanted to take foster kids at some point, but my career was too demanding, but I would do that in a heartbeat. I love kids. And unfortunately, you know, even knowing that, I'd have to say that maybe people shouldn't be signing up for foster care until we can get some kind of reform and accountability going on, because what I see is what happened to you. They're forcing these adoptions so they can make the adoption money and then get in the foster care's pocket for child support and then adopt them out again. And what they're doing, like you said, they're targeting the foster parents because they can't just go into anybody, Joe Schmo at Safeway, and go, hey, you're going to adopt a kid. But the people who are lining up voluntarily, they can. And then the way they are forcing them, like you, you'll either lose your license, which, again, guys, this isn't income. These are people who really love this. So like you heard, she loved this child and she did it because it was in the best interest of the child. And these are people who open up their homes to love these children and act in the best interest of children. So when you talk about taking their license, you're just hitting them right in the heart, and you're hitting them at the part where they fear they won't be able to help future children, right? And and then they come after their own children. This is wrong. This is harassment. And I'm going to say it, guys. This is a government-funded agency. So the behavior of these individuals doing this accounts for government harassment. This is not how America works, or at least it's not supposed to be. So that's where, you know, reform and advocacy, this is the brokenness that breeds reform, advocacy. And how podcasts like this pop up out of nowhere to discuss hard topics and to show these people who don't want to take phone calls and don't like to return emails and, you know, feel like, you know, they can't do anything. I think you're going to have a large part of when I get a legislation team together to write legislation. I think you're going to have valuable input on how we can protect foster parents. And again, yes, there's adults. Yes, their incomes and their livelihoods and their biological children are being affected due to harassment. But again, this is at the heart of creating brighter futures for children that shouldn't have to go through what they're going through. This poor girl, I mean, geez, well, they took her when she was, what, 3? So she had been moved for, what did you say, a dozen times over a year or something?
No, a dozen times in 5 years of her life.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. And what my husband and I, we were had her for 2 years, and we were the most stable placement that she'd ever been in.
And again, I just
she's been moved 3 times since they took her from us.
And there's something really important I have to say. It's because, okay, I come from a military family, okay? So moving a dozen times is not grounds to take a child or damage a child. Otherwise, our own military wouldn't be able to do that to families, okay? So what damages these kids is that they're being removed from, and their psychological bond with their primary caregiver is being broken, and they're being put in homes in a different place, different strangers all the time. And this is what's causing her to be, you know, like just a, I hate to say it, it creates like a little wandering broken soul that's lost. And then they sit there and they want to label these kids like there's something wrong with them. Well, you don't fucking do that. You don't get to break them and then sit there and say, oh, you poor thing, you're so broken. You know what? Because I wish kids could drop F-bombs, because I would just want one day some 5-year-old to go like, you broke me. What are you talking about? You know, I mean, if kids could talk, I mean, I try to find humor in this situation, but there's really not. I feel for these children. And I think it's all very unnecessary, don't you? I think there's a better way.
Yeah.
There's a better way, because I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, there is a better way. I mean,
I'm so passionate about doing foster care, and I love to open my home up. And no thanks to the county, they have successfully ruined that for the rest of my life. I can't even volunteer in my kids' classes. School. I can't go to class with my grandkids. I can't go on field trips with my grandkids.
Oh, man.
You know, so I don't get to do that stuff because of what they've done to me. Because they decided they were going to report me to the Child Abuse Index.
To leverage you.
Yes.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Everybody's going to go on notice, because much like you've left most people wondering about the future of their lives and the future of their children, I'm happy to say at this point, I'm going to leave all these social workers involved in the 9,624 cases with this. What if we did a background check on you and your activities that occurred outside of work? Like, oh, I don't know, maybe DUIs, maybe living with sex offenders, maybe getting dismissed for 6 months due to a DUI, and you're responsible for transporting children. So just remember, when you start poking around and lying about people, you might want to remember, you might want to make sure your own life is pretty squeaky clean. So I'll just leave that there. And everybody can sleep tonight on wondering, who do we have background checks on? Because we have access to a lot of skip tracers and a lot of databases and highly intelligent people who are used to vetting entertainment money and making sure money isn't fraudulent. And as far as skip tracing for, I don't know, saying repossessing vehicles, vehicles are more, you know, possessions are harder to find than humans, because unlike a car that gets stuck into a storage shed or something, they have to show up and be accountable every day. They have to eat. They have to drive a car. They get tickets. They get paychecks. They eat out. We're consumers. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question. Now, after we did our adoption, we had put our adopted daughter on the insurance for my husband's work, and we've maintained that insurance for her. And I tried to give that to the CPS worker, and she refused to take the private insurance. She wouldn't take it. We still have her on our insurance even to this day. And when I told the child support that, they said, oh, well, you'll probably just end up having to take her off of it. But I'm still trying to meet my obligation.
So you're paying for her.
I'm just wondering, why wouldn't they take our insurance card for her?
We already established that. Because they do not have control over the doctors. Period. There's, you know, the thing from what I can understand about the state insurance is that it's a large amount of money for any doctor's office that gets these kids, but it takes them longer to get paid. And again, this is an open source ongoing investigation. We could be right or wrong at any time, and we encourage anyone to contact us through the justicespeaksup.us website. We're also going to be establishing a PayPal where anybody whose heart goes out to some of these families who are needing, you know, legal fees, you can send it and we'll make sure it gets to the families, because again, they are not going to give you their private information. They're just not. They have entrusted us with their case and to assist them and to be a social justice for their case. But again, guys, you know, many people don't have the heart to open up their home to these children. And this woman took the kids that nobody else wanted, who, what I can see, are really the broken kids. And these are just the ones that were the most traumatized, right? Being taken away. And this little girl is a good example. Again, you know, mom had falsification of evidence to take this child away and adopt her out. And even the foster mother who loves her and would take her herself would like to see her reunited with her biological mother. And I'm going to find her. I'm going to find her. And if I can bring her on, I want to hear her story.
I would like to see her pursue to try to get her biological child back, because, you know, I still feel like I'm her mom, but she has a biological mom that carried her for 9 months, that gave birth to her, that loved her. And I so would love to see her get her back.
Let me tell you something. I respect you so much. And I am, by the way, you know, she's going to be stepping into, you know, giving us some anonymous tips later down the road and ways to help us understand the foster care system. But I have a large amount of respect for you for advocating for this biological mother, because one of the reasons I started this project, for a lot of reasons, but one is family reunification, to reunify these parents and children who are wrongfully separated due to court corruption. And that's what it is. Let's just call a spade a spade. I'm not gonna pussyfoot around. The evidence speaks for itself. Somebody's accountable. You guys have lied. You guys have falsified evidence. You belong in jail. You need to compensate these parents, and you need to atone for what you've done. And all of the taxpayers and parents of America and the middle, because you're targeting the middle class, upper middle class people predominantly, and the poor. And, you know, we need you out of these offices. We need you out. And, but again, you know, if you're one of those individuals that are intimidated and you're scared you're going to lose your kids, speak out. You're helping clean up this system, okay? And this just can't go on anymore. I just can't sit here and watch the carnage of children and families anymore. It's so heartbreaking. And I know you must, with all the kids you had, you must have seen more than just this case.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I would like to hear? Because I get randomly sent videos to me now of children, to where children are now sending me videos of their testimonies in foster care. Some of them are scared and they're hovering in corners and they're just trying to speak out and go, you know, my mommy's good to me. She loves me. I want to go home. You know, somebody lied. And then, you know, I was told when I was taken to the office at school that I was going to be going to stay with a family member. And instead, I'm here at some stranger's house. I mean, these children are exhibiting signs of abducted children. What was that like to receive some of these kids? I mean, how are these children acting when you first get them? I mean, I can see where like maybe the first 2-3 days they're like, hey, I'll be going home. And yeah, this is a stranger, but okay. You know, whatever lies were told to them, you know, got them in that car. And then the next thing you know, what's it like after 4 or 5 days or the second week? I mean, do you just start to see their spirit break?
Yes, and usually it was always called the honeymoon period, which was anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks was a honeymoon period. I am still in contact with a lot of our foster kids who have aged out of the system. They still talk to me and my husband and our grown adult children because they were like our kids. They're still like our kids. A lot of these kids come in thinking that, oh, I'm just going to be here for the night, or I'm just going to be here for a week, and I've heard it so many times from them. I'm going home next week. And I'm not going to be the one that says, oh, no, honey, they're lying to you. You know, even though I'd like to be honest, completely honest with them, I just said, well, you know, let's make do. We don't know when you're going home. I always tried to give positive reinforcement to the kids. I always let them know that we are just their temporary care providers. You know, that you know, I'm happy. I was always happy to see the kids go back home to their families. Because I didn't only attach with this one biological mom. I attached to a lot of our foster kids' biological families. You know, I had an autistic kid here that was doped out on medication, and I fought and got her off these psychiatric drugs, and she got to go live with her grandma. And her grandma still to this day, thank you so much for advocating, because she was like a zombie. They had her on so many drugs, she was like a walking zombie. And that was another child that somebody couldn't handle it because, you know, she was making animal sounds, so the lady got rid of her.
Yeah, they medicate. They basically pump the kids up full of drugs because the autistic children have a attachment to the parents. It's intensified more so than other children, and they literally have to medicate them to calm them down. Because of their echolalia and their routine, and they have to disrupt the routine, and it's harder to break the psychological bond with an autistic child. I'm sure you can tell from your experience dealing with them, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of these kids, when they get put into care, their thought is, you know, I'm going home next week. Yeah. You know? And then when they don't get to go home next week and they're still with me 5 months later, you know, well, my parents are doing everything they're told to do. How come? Because we've got a lot of teenage girls. They're smart. You know, and teenagers, they're going to say how it is. And they would say, I don't understand. My parents are doing everything they're told. They show up to all the visits. How come they're not letting us go home? You know, how am I supposed to explain that to these kids? You know, I mean, it really, you know, there are a lot of bad foster parents that are doing it for the wrong reasons. Absolutely are. And I ran into some myself, and I have nothing to do with any of them. Because if you're doing it for the wrong reasons and you're doing it for money, you're a sick individual. Because now, guess what? That child's not even going to bond with that foster parent. Because the foster parent doesn't want to take the time to listen to that child. The child knows, oh, I'm just a paycheck for this person.
Well, I mean, but those particular foster parents, you know, evil attracts evil, and it's harder for the beauty to survive in darkness sometimes. I mean, this is how you've been forced out because you were an advocate and you were able to reunite some parents, and you're really just truly a child advocate at the end of it all. You want that child to be wherever that child is going to be happiest and flourish and where it rightfully belongs. And, you know, some people are struggling with the loss of one or two children. You've had over 100 in your home and in your heart, and you've had to let them all go. I mean, that's why I said I have a lot of respect for you and the work that you do. And, you know, I've done a lot of volunteer work with kids, and I get attached to them, you know, and sometimes I'd only see them for a summer, or, you know, some I've only seen for one or two days. But, you know, it's just a soul connection, right? So I'm very sorry. So
it's nice that some of them still talk to us. Quite a bit of them still talk to us. It's really nice because we still have they still call me mom. I never forced any of them to call me mom. You know, but they heard all the other kids calling me mom, you know. But I just have a good relationship with them, you know. They call me for advice all the time.
Well, I can tell you, I've been
you know, I think every child that's in foster care should go after the state. Every child, they should go after them.
Yeah, they should. Well, I mean, you know, that's what we're helping to do. We're helping these families get justice and what they are entitled to as a victim of crime, because I think this is fraud. Now, think about that. Somebody steals your credit card and harms you. There's a law for that. You know, fraud is fraud, and whatever the damages are, in this case, it's human collateral damage. You're breaking souls, so there's plenty of jails. I mean, we're fine. And as a matter of fact, I mean, you will learn that you'll be treated better as a criminal than you will as a parent fighting for their child. A criminal has more rights than a person fighting for their child. So, where is our little person that was supposed to chime in with that child support monetary amount? Do you have it yet?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what is it?
It would be around $900.
$900. Well, I knew it was going to be more.
It could be what is around $882, $880 to $900.
Okay. That's interesting to me. Now, times that times, God only knows how many thousands of kids. That adds up.
Yeah. That's a lot.
I mean, I would like to have, you know, here we go. Can 100,000 people send me $100 via PayPal right now? Right? It would add up.
Yeah.
Of course, I would put it to good use. So when you look at it like that, times, you know, 50 states... it's a lot of money. And so we got to figure out where that money is going. Because if the $812 isn't following the child, why would that little difference follow the child? And why will they not accept private insurance? So these are questions I have that we're going to get to the bottom of. I think we're wrapping up. I think there's questions we need to ask. I think you and I need to probably do some more exploring And if you could help me in any way get in touch with that biological mother, I'd like that. I think we're going to wrap it up. And guys, we did run over. This was intended to be a, 90-minute special because we have a foster parent that's come forward. So we want your feedback. We want your feedback. Leave it on the Justice Speaks Up Facebook page. We also have an Instagram. You can also follow my influencer accounts, which is at Archer Sierra. I'm very active on Twitter. I'm still waiting for Instagram to make me an official account so I can do fancy, like, you know, the little swipe up stories over on YouTube. So, because we're not so special yet, but hey, we're earning our street credit. We're working on it. Thank you for joining us, and we're just going to wrap it up right there. Thank you for our little assistant who chimed in with her stories. We appreciate that, and we'll probably do that a lot more often, trying to get more than one guest on at a time to add some diversity. And until the next episode, thank you everybody for joining us, and thank you everybody for your feedback, and continue to send us your stories via justicespeaksup.us. And again, I offer anybody involved in any of these cases or agencies, please assist our investigation so we can better understand, excuse me, and how to properly teach parents how to self-advocate and work with your program in order to increase the amount of family reunifications coming out of your agency. And on that note, everybody have a good night. Thank you to all the artists and music and authors that I use your stuff online to express, you know, the emotional side of this story and our journey. And we will be vlogging soon, as soon as I relocate. Again, have a good night. Until the next episode, keep rising.
Thank you.
This has been brought to you by Drown Rat Productions. Remember, we are everywhere and nowhere.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.